Time for our final installment of Dig Deep on infrastructure. Broadband is where we begin here. Who wants to start, Aaron?
Well, why don't I start this one? Because it's an issue that I've been involved with and have advocated for a long time. So,
And I've been harassing him
about it. And Chuck has harassed me on it.
Every time that Aaron, you know, we're friends on Facebook and have been for a long time. And every time he'll post some positive thing about broadband, I have to like needle him. And I can tell, you know, you can't really get the tone on Facebook just right, but I can tell that he's annoyed and ticked off with me sometimes.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad. But I am set to go on this issue because I do feel like it's an important discussion, particularly for rural America, rural anywhere, but America in particular, because we're an unusual country this way. We're very big in terms of geography, so we have many, many big cities and many, many small towns and many, many vast, relatively depopulated areas. But we also have one of the weakest technology infrastructures for the modern world in terms of industrialized countries. So we have vast parts of the country that until fairly recently really had only their connection to a phone-based internet connection, or the option of getting a satellite dish to put on your house, and that's certainly what I used for many years. But the quality and the speed of that internet and the price point for it were vastly inferior to what people in other countries have available to them, because other places may not have developed the technology originally, but they certainly adopted it and then created a plan to, as they rolled out the development of these fast-growing countries, to have internet be a part of the infrastructure buffet that goes out. And so I guess what I start the discussion with is this idea that in America, one of the critical missing steps was that internet was not, at least until recently, considered a utility like phone and water. Particularly phone and electricity are the two I would compare it to the most, where those are regulated utilities that recognize that rural areas need a little help to get the infrastructure out there, because customer to cost makes it difficult for private entities to spend the money without a return coming for in decades in some cases. So I've advocated for public-private or public involvement in getting internet out to rural areas, and northern Minnesota and the Iron Range in particular were areas that really were behind, again, until we started to see some success, some big success, Chuck, in recent years that I know he has needled me on.
I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, I know.
So I was in rural Italy climbing the mountains in some national park they had, far, far from anywhere. And I got to the top of this hill and it was so beautiful. And I thought, you know, I'd really like to call my wife. And I pulled up my cell phone. And not only did I have full connectivity, I had a perfect connection. It was amazing. And I thought, I can't even do this like on my back porch, you know, back home. The service is so bad. So I'm with you that we have a deficiency in quality in many ways. There's a story that has stuck with me for a long time about the Tennessee Valley Authority and really about the electrification of rural America. Back in the early 1900s, big cities had electricity, had electric lights, had trolleys, had all the things that went with electricity, and rural areas did not. That didn't mean we didn't have pumps, we didn't have electric generators, we didn't have a lot of things, but what you saw at the time was this huge emphasis on things that would be energy efficient, because people in rural areas didn't have energy to waste. The way we were producing energy was very localized, and we had to come up with very energy frugal kind of devices. As things were rolled out, be it a washing machine or electric motors, there were always these kind of very frugal, energy frugal kind of ones that were targeted to rural areas because we just didn't have the electricity. Now we go in, we run electricity all over the place and essentially wipe out that part of the market. I've always thought it'd be fascinating if, you know, because there was clearly the demand for it, as there is a demand for good telecommunication services now. How would our energy efficiency equation look differently today if we had allowed some of those technologies, really the precursor of solar and some of the things that we're trying to subsidize into existence today, what if we allowed demand to kind of bring those to the fore? So I look at broadband today and I say, in rural Italy, up on the mountain, I got great cell coverage. I got great internet connection, not because someone had run a cable up there and there was some, you know, national policy to do it, but because they had deployed the technology that actually worked in that space. You dig a wire underground and that wire is going to be there for the next 30 years, whether that's the cutting edge technology or not. There's clearly a demand in rural America, you know, for some type of coverage. Is this the best technology to do it? And are we stunting the development of something that would be even better and make us even more competitive by kind of marrying ourselves to a nationalized policy of let's give a bunch of money to a bunch of corporations to give us the thing that was cutting edge 15 years ago?
I think with the case of fiber optic cable, you're dealing with, I mean, yeah, 50 years in terms of anything involving technology, especially nowadays. I mean, 50 years, I mean, it could be argued we might be more machine than man.
We'll be cyborg 50 years from now.
Yeah. It's really hard to say what the future brings.
We will be having this conversation just digitally, yes. Telepathy. Yeah,
right. And it'll be wordless, and it'll be our severed heads in a bucket.
It'll be a hologram. You and me in a hologram on a front porch somewhere.
But with a reasonable assumption being, I think, that fiber optic cable will be able to deliver high-speed internet into the foreseeable future, I think that I'm not saying string a fiber optic cable to every single place, but I am saying we already have a pretty elaborate infrastructure for power. We already have a pretty elaborate infrastructure for phone. And what I'm saying is there's not a particularly huge difference to add as we're digging or adding that infrastructure to add broadband cable to that equation. Because yes, redigging is probably the biggest cost right now because we already dug the power in the phone or we strung it along the lines. And going back and digging it is new expense. And, you know, we see that. But I think in some areas where there's enough population density, I think that's a wise thing to do. It won't make money at first, but it will make money in the long run as you look, count up the people. Now, if you get into the extremely rural places, and we have them in our listening areas, the further north you go into the woods, you find people for whom that would be a difficulty. But it's difficult for them to get power and phone for the same reason. And I'm just saying that we shouldn't have this separate class for it. Now, you mentioned the technology, and I was actually shopping for towers that I could install on my property. Radio towers that I could then beam microwave signals from town. The nearest town is, I think, 10 or 12 miles away. And I was going, and I've explored all kinds of things. And you know, there's this kid down in Texas who figured out how to resell internet using these various relay towers. And there's all kinds of ways to deliver the internet. And I'm not trying to pretend that's not the case. You know, you've got your cell phones and your different digital technology. I guess what I'm saying, though, is that these forms of new delivery are not being rolled out for the same reasons that the cables aren't being rolled out, is that nobody wants to take that leap. And I guess if somebody had a really great idea for delivering the internet to rural areas without digging cable, I'm all ears. And I used to be a big proponent of publicly owned internet. I'm against it. I'm just saying that I'm not as hot on that as I used to be because I don't even care anymore how this happens. But people are being left out, and you see it every day with kids. And I teach online for a community college. Our dominant market is people going back to school, people who can't afford going to a more illustrious institution, people retraining for new employment after losing old employment or being underemployed for a number of years. And these are the people who, when I talk to them about some very basic usage of internet, like creating a presentation through video or connecting with your fellow classmates to have a group discussion that is recorded using video. They don't have the technology. They don't have the access. They're living at home, and their internet for them is driving to town and going to Caribou Coffee, which has a whole other set of problems with it. So what are we doing for them? Because I've had the same, not just with you, Chuck. There's a certain state representative. I've also had a conversation with a Republican who is a tech guy who knows the technology backwards and forwards. Actually, Pat Garofalo, I'll say his name. He's a tech guy in real life. He's an IT guy. And so he knows the technology, and he talks about different methods of delivery. But that's nice. But that's like saying there's a magic unicorn that will save the day if only we believe hard enough. And I'm waiting for that unicorn to arrive.
Well, let me ask you this, because it seems like what you're saying is that there's an unmet need in the market that people would be willing to pay for, but there's no one out there providing it.
There's an unmet need, but the market is where that word gets tricky, because the market implies people need to be able to make money doing it.
Right. So here's the thing. If I were in that market today, if I were the tech guy trying to provide mm-hmm. that technology, it's clear to me that I was just going to say people like you. I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, uh-huh. but you know, people who are advocating for the government to step in and make this happen, you're more than happy to have essentially other people or some way to subsidize the big telecom company to come in and put it in. Why would I try to fill that market niche, go out on a limb, invest my money, raise capital, mm-hmm. do all that, if I'm just going to get undercut by the big players?
The first player in the market, using the market terminology,
yeah,
loses. They do lose. And that's precisely why it hasn't happened. Why would a private company invest knowing that they take the risk?
Because I think you're assuming that it mm-hmm. has to be a pipe or a wire or something. I'm suggesting that there are other technologies. The Hunt family in Pine River, who developed the Turtle. I had no clue this technology was even possible. The Turtle solved a...
Do tell.
I will.
Do you know that you don't know the Turtle?
I don't know the Turtle.
Happy Dancing Turtle.
Happy Dancing Turtle. Their idea, it brilliantly solved a problem, and it solved it in a very simple way. So if you have an electric meter, you have to go out and, you know, remember when the guys would pull up and they'd go read your electric
meter?
Yeah,
or you used to read your own meter sometimes.
Sometimes. And then they'd come and audit you and check on it. If you're a little short of money one month, you'd read it a little low. And yeah, no, I hear you. So I remember that. I mean, I grew up on a farm. We had the guys that would pull in and do that. So the Turtle, one of the technologies they were trying to do is have automatic reading. So could these have cell signals on them? Could they be connected to some type of broadband-like connection? Mm-hmm. What the Turtle people realize is that you already have a cable. There's an electric cable. Why don't you just send the signal over that? Well, the thing is, it's got to be really slow. You couldn't do an internet over a wire like that. It's not fast enough. But all you're sending is a handful of numbers.
Right.
You can send them very slow, and you can send them at odd hours. And so they created this thing called the Turtle Slow that would transmit this stuff. And it saved power companies tons and tons of money. If we had had a nationalized program to have meter readers or have, you know, some type of cellular technology that would be put on all these things to save on what have you, I don't think the Turtle ever gets off the ground. And not because it's not a brilliant idea and not because it saved it, but because there is no longer an unmet need. There's no longer a demand for something new. And it's always in a market-based system, the painful feedback of having not having something available or having available at too high of a price that drives innovation. And I am about rural innovation. How do we get not the suburban solution subsidized and brought here? That was the whole conversation we had about the sewer and water system. How do we get a truly small town rural solution customized and built for us that actually makes sense for us?
And I hear you. I want to say I hear you. And I've seen some...
You just want your...
No, because let me tell you why I've come to this conclusion. And it is northern Minnesota specific. The example, there is this kid, I think I mentioned it a while back, down in Texas. For $10,000, I think he figured out a way to make a relay network of small towers that would relay high speed, or at least relatively high speed internet. Certainly high enough quality for me or even professional users to use. And it was way, way better than dial-up. And he was able to do it through really, frankly, entrepreneurial go-getter attitude. You know, hey, if you sign up and you sign up and you sign up, we've got enough money. And he's actually made a business out of it in very, very rural Texas, small towns. They were talking like you know, from the movies, the sleepy towns out in the middle of the plains. I looked into this story. I'm like, man, if this guy can do it, he's just a tech-savvy kid who figured it out. What can we do here? You know, and I think that's what you're talking about here is what can we do to create different ways of doing it? And what we ran into is, and this is the problem when I was shopping for towers, and all of the radio signal-based problems are trees and mine dumps in the case of the Iron Range. It's one of the reasons we struggle to, I mean, I know we're talking to Dan, our engineer here at the radio station, just getting the dang radio signal over on the range can be a challenge because of those factors. So it's an actual engineering impediment. You know, it doesn't mean you can't get around it. And I'm all, again, if you can get those signals down into the trees, down to the homes where people live, and it, you can do all that cheaper than running cable, I'd be for that. But there's the talk of something, and then there's the doing of something. And this is where I've come to I started talking about this when I was at the paper, 2002. And it went, I mean, I sat with a guy from Quest at the time, who said that this place where I live now was going to have access to DSL, which is, again, not that fast, but it would have been better than dial-up, that it was going to be there in 5 years. And then 5 years went, and it was CenturyLink, and they said 5 years. And 5 years go by, CenturyLink says 5 years. We got some federal money coming. Don't worry, this time we really got it. But it's still sitting there. And what ended up happening in my case, and this is the success I was talking about, is Paul Bunyan Communication, which is a cooperative network, keyed into what the governor was doing with the border-to-border broadband initiative and got grant funding to create this part of the cooperative network for cable, phone, and television and internet. Now I have that. And other people in rural Itasca County have that. And there's small expansions. They're putting their own money in too, but it's about 50-50. And that's what's expanding the network of high-speed internet.
So I hear you saying you had one big corporation that was getting, you know, hope to get government backing, promising you 5 years. They were replaced by another corporation that was going to get government
They're
backing.
They're monopolistic.
And then we were able to transfer to a cooperative made under some type of government subsidy program that now has provided it. And this is what I was saying, is that you've essentially had 15 years of suppression of innovation because it was always coming through this program.
So lacking the program, though, what is the thing that will get this to happen? And that's
your demand for it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing that will make it happen.
Ultimately, what got the cooperative involved was a very elaborate local organization. Now, why did Central Itasca County get it and not St. Louis County or some other part of northern Minnesota that maybe had more political connections? The reason is because Central Itasca County as a whole organized a consumer-based model where everybody said what they wanted out of their internet service. They created a database of people, customers, who would pay. And Paul Bunyan took advantage of the grant program, of course, but saw that and it made sense in their cost analysis that it would be worthwhile to expand. Now, that's, again, I don't know what the alternative would be to that if we're actually going to expand this before, as you say, the technology is replaced by telepathy or whatever the heck they have 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 years from now.
Because I always like to throw in like one controversial thing that Aaron can't respond to at the end.
Here we go.
that generates all the phone calls and angry emails.
I'm ready.
I think that the system that we are in the process of putting in, where we run wire all over the place to connect people, regardless of where they live, is one that, again, makes us kind of vulnerable to this demographic transition. If you're in the Twin Cities and you're saying, all right, we're going to subsidize broadband for the state, and you look out at the farmer, at the farm field, or, you know, the person working at the mine, or, you know, the city of Grand Rapids, which is a discrete place, there's some common sense to that. But if you're saying, you know, I'm going to subsidize the college professor who wants to live in the woods because that's where he likes to live, that's a harder sell. And when we step back and look at small towns in rural Minnesota, how much of the places we live and want to have that lifestyle subsidized is an actual economic imperative for the state, i.e. something the Twin Cities Metro should subsidize, and how much of it is our own lifestyle choices that we want to live this way. I think that I'm not trying to question the lifestyle choices. I'm just questioning the long-term viability of it because it requires massive ongoing subsidies from an area that we're antagonizing on a daily basis.
I hear Chuck questioning your lifestyle choices, Aaron.
Do we need what I eat is far more troubling than where I live.
And we're out of time, but do you have a response you would like to make? To?
It's I could afford the satellite internet that I had before that was annoying but adequate. I can afford that. It was for the package I got that was enough to do my online school was 140-150 bucks just for the internet a month. I could afford that because I'm a elite college professor. But the people across the road from me couldn't afford that. And I happen to have a student.
You should have sold them some of your access.
Trees. We've been over this. Remember me shopping for towers? But the people who live there, and really, I'm not saying they had no choice, but lifestyle, talking about lifestyle choices, you know, you end up at the home that your parents had or you live where your spouse lives. And the kids who grow up in the school district have zero choice until they grow up and acquire the ability to move themselves. The point is we need a system that recognizes that these people do have needs. They might not be profitable needs, but they have needs for connection with the economy of now. And I'm not talking about the economy of the future. I'm talking about the economy of now. And that's what I have to say about that.
We want to hear from you. Weigh in on it. Thanks for listening to this radio program, Dig Deep, as well as the podcast. Send us an email, comments@kaxe.org. Aaron Brown and Chuck Marone on Dig Deep.
Maybe your baby done made some other plan. Maybe your baby done made some other plan.